Welcome to episode 168 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. How you going, guys?
Going well, Jace. Going well. Trying to raise some extra money, create some extra money. There's talk in the household that we might be getting Penny Lane, our golden retriever, pregnant and going through the birthing process and giving Charlie an adventure of a lifetime. It was incredible. Cole was sort of talking to me about it, and we know the breeders of obviously Penny, and they're willing to put us under their, you know, under their sort of process and learn, like they'll run it. But it was interesting, like golden retrievers sell at $5,000 a pop, but the cost to get the artificial insemination and all the tests and do it the right way and the right, you know, the right male dog too, it's all about, you know, sort of $7,000 to $8,000. So, but if you have 9 pups, you know, you might keep one and sell 8 and, you know, make some good money on it. So that's the talk around the Vids house. But we thought, you know, I'm talking money here, but the real thing is, what a great experience. So we've been watching all these dog birthing videos and stuff, but yeah, Charlie's so excited. And so is Cole, surprisingly. So
if the ATO has tuned in, Marty will be doing this as a hobby. That $40,000 is only going to cover costs. There'll be no profit. It's not a profit-making enterprise. So no, just kidding. We won't go into the tax implications.
It'll all be under the ABN.
Yeah, good work, Marty. Love your work, mate. Did not see it going that way. You always bring surprises to the, you know, the front of an episode before we dig into things. So you appreciate
well,
that.
Well, I figured last episode we were talking about your pimple. So I thought I just had to bring it back to something, you know, something a bit more tangible.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Nick, take us on a better direction than what we've just covered, pimples and pups.
Well, it's not a better direction. It just got me thinking. We've got one cat and I'm trying to work out how to have zero. So I'm just wondering why Marty's bringing more in. I bring this up. I think I talked about the robo vacuum. Did I talk about the robo vacuum?
Yeah, you did.
Game changer.
Yeah.
But the amount of that, you put that thing on, and I'm just going to say again, it's amazing. but the one thing that absolutely blows me away is the amount of cat hair that thing picks up. So yeah. I'm thinking, how much was floating around and is still floating around that thing's not picking up? That you know, no wonder we're walking around sneezing. So the fact that you want to bring four more in, I know you're going to sell them, but there's still a process. There's still a process.
If it wasn't for the RoboVac, I wouldn't be going down this channel. It is a game changer.
So just interested in I assume there's a revenue split here, given they're supplying, you know, a lot of resources.
Definitely.
It's almost
definitely
like a pyramid scheme.
We're really doing it for the experience of it, more so than anything else.
Shut up. You're doing it for the cash. Cole's doing it for the experience.
I am, yes. Yes.
You've got dollar signs.
I am. Yes, I am. Okay.
Off the back of our last episode, Marty's also now on Flatmate Finder. So if you want to see Marty's house, head to flatmatefinder.com.au. You'll see Marty's got a couple of rooms available for rent. If you didn't catch the last episode on housing affordability, you'll need to go back and revisit that one. But today, to get things back on track.
Just quickly, yes, on that, I'm pretty sure he just put an NX off the side of his house and got a portaloo in. He's put that up for rent.
There's a garden shed that I've decked out with a hose and a comfy seat. As long as you can sleep sitting up, you'll be right. Only $400 a day.
We've hit crazy time at the Numbers Game recording studio. That's what's happened at the moment. Now, back on track, we're talking about an interesting topic that always gets Aussies' interest pricked up. We're talking about billionaires. We're going behind the billions and we're having a bit of a look at some of Australia's richest. The new 250 rich list came out. There's a few new names on there. There's a few familiar faces that we've talked about on our episode before, with the good old Lambo man, Adrian Portelli, making the list. And guys, if it's okay, I'd like to unpack a few things about how this list is put together and how it's calculated, and, you know, share with you some examples of some new faces and some old faces. So what do you think? Dive in?
No, I think I'm pretty sure Marty went through the process in 2015. I'm pretty sure he was on the list. So there's no better person to talk to about how they work it out.
Perfect. I've been on plenty of lists. I'm nowhere near that one.
No. No, all right. Well, to give you guys from the top, so the billionaire list is obviously a process of being able to calculate how does somebody pass as being a billionaire? You know, do they send in their bank statement and have to show that they've got, you know, a whole bunch of zeros after a number in their bank account? And often this is a misconceived idea of, you know, what it is to be a billionaire. So we look at Gina Rinehart, for example, who topped the list again. She's been on top of the list for a long, long time. She's got a company called Hancock Prospecting, so mining wealth. And this year she was listed at being worth $50 billion. And that was up on a previous year's list where she was $37 billion. Now, when you think about this wealth, you know, how she created an extra $13 billion in a year. So I wanted to talk to you about what the process is of calculating that and where that value comes from. But that's obviously such a big number that you think surely she's not sitting on $50 billion in cash. So to answer the question, net worth is not just a cash calculation. Net worth is basically the value of your assets, which is your business ownership, which means the value of your business or the shares in the business that you own, its securities, other things that you own, and cash. And that could be property, all different things. So the value of your assets. So think anything that's an asset, you value that. Then you have to minus off your liabilities. So just like, you know, when we're talking about the housing episode, you might buy a $1.2 million house, but if the bank gives you a $1.1 million loan for it, your net worth is $100,000 if you're just including the value of that house for this calculation. Have I lost you guys? Or so far so good for net worth?
We're good.
All
good. Perfect. So the challenge, though, with calculating this net worth idea is when you think about private companies that aren't, let's say, ASX listed. So if you've got an ASX listed company, the market value is pretty much what people are willing to pay for it on the open market. You know, if I've got a CommBank share, it's worth $100 and Nick, you want to buy it. You say, yeah, it's worth $100. You buy it. Then you multiply the $100 share value by all of the available shares in CommBank and you've got the value of the Commonwealth Bank. Now, for example, Hancock Prospecting, Gina Rinehart, you know, looking to value Hancock Prospecting and get a value for her shares, there's, you know, the process that needs to be followed for that. But then you've got all the way down the list, guys, like let's say we can use Adrian Portelli as an example, who came in on the rich list at worth $1.3 billion. Now, when you talk about, you know, there's not so much public financial disclosures, there's not so much maybe the ability to get market valuation in a way that can be fully transparent of what these private companies are worth. And then some illiquid assets. You imagine, you know, a year ago, if somebody was holding a shitload of Bitcoin on their balance sheets, the company may not have got them into the billionaire rich list. But all of a sudden, a year later, when the value of Bitcoin has gone from $40,000 a coin to over $100,000 a coin, maybe all of a sudden you're on the billionaire rich list purely because of shift in value of Bitcoin, which doesn't actually mean you've got liquid assets or liquid cash unless you're willing to sell them down. But it still forms part of your net worth calculation on a certain date in time. So when you think about that, I mean, especially with tech companies, the multiple and the valuations for tech companies can often be, you know, sometimes a multiple of revenue, or it can be an EBITDA method where you multiply the profits a business is making. So there's so many different ways that this can be calculated that it often sit there going, when you look behind the billions, how many of these people are actually cashed up and, you know, acting like billionaires, or are they paper billionaires, for example? The verification process then, you know, there's a huge amount of time and data that goes in behind the scenes. Often these billionaires have their people because they've got people because they're billionaires. They deal with the officials from the Australian Financial Review, the people doing the rich list. And those representatives go back and forward, verifying data, scrutinizing the documents that have been uploaded, the financial disclosures, court records. And they usually do a mixture of publicly available information and the privately uploaded disclosures from the billionaires that, you know, are getting themselves onto these lists. Question at the moment, guys, is, you know, if you were approaching having $1 billion, would you put your name forward to be on that list?
No.
100% not.
It's interesting, like, you know, thinking from the other side, going, what, you know, there's probably a whole bunch of people on the list that don't have a choice because they're known to have that amount of wealth. But when you're kind of approaching the tail end of that 250 list, you know, do you think it's a publicity thing where, you know, they can increase, you know, I guess if you're thinking about it from Adrian Portelli's point of view, maybe he actually can get more sales from having his name in the media, and, you know, any publicity is good publicity.
Mind you, Jace, that's probably why we're not billionaires.
Very true. Maybe it's all mindset, baby.
You know what I mean? It's like I'm sitting here going, I would never promote that because I'd have too many cousins knocking on the door wanting a car. But again, it is a mindset thing, and I think they'd utilise it as maybe a marketing or a commercial benefit play out in the market of who they're dealing with at that level. That's the only place my mind goes.
And ego. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Like, if, at the end of the day, if you've done that well, kudos to you, fantastic. Yep. But it'd be publicity and ego for sure, because to your point, Jace, those people probably at the bottom of the list, and I haven't seen the list, but they're probably putting their hand up saying, please put me on the list.
You know, of the list of the richest 250, the amount of billionaires that were on the list is 159 billionaires. So then everything else after that is, you know, in the ridiculous amount of millions. But, you know, so to then, I guess, get yourself onto that list, you know, you've had your net worth calculated, you've gone through the verification process, you then end up, you know, in magazines and articles and pictures online, which, you know, puts billionaires in the spotlight. So again, it's around, you know, what's the benefit, and what, you know, what, I guess there's also an obsession with the general public. You know, if you go to Google, sometimes you'll type someone's name in and the next suggested search term is net worth, you know, and, you know, I've been guilty of doing it plenty of times. Go, oh, I wonder what that person's worth. And, you know, you're Googling someone now, Nick. I can see Nick typing away.
I'm just actually Googling the list.
Richest250.com.au, something like that. You should be able to find it. Now, just to talk to you about a couple of them, there's a few new faces that have found their way onto the list this year. One of them is Nicola Forrest. I believe she divorced Andrew Forrest from the Fortescue Metals Group and ended up with a whole bunch of that wealth. So she came in at being worth $37 billion. I think she's the second richest woman in Australia behind Gina. You've also then got, you know, familiar businesses that you can then go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. The founders of Chemist Warehouse, Jack Gance and Sam Gance. Now, they're worth $3.26 billion. I believe that's each, because their wealth is separated and divided. And actually, Chemist Warehouse, I think, is reverse, or going back to being listed on the ASX as well. So, I mean, that's somewhat easy to verify. I think one of the pharmaceuticals companies is going to buy Chemist Warehouse in a deal and list, probably public information. It's probably old news. I don't know. I might be rehashing it. There's a few other interesting ones, though, when you think about the different industries that make it, because, you know, we quite often see things like, you know, retail groups, pharmaceuticals, mining. You think they're the standard ones where the old money from old times just continue to grow. But and a new one on there, Tim Heath from a group called YOLO Group. So quite like the name, came in at being worth $2.15 billion. Now his background is online poker and casinos and hotel ventures. So, you know, getting into the technology space of online gambling and online casinos, he's made an absolute killing all over the world, launching, you know, gambling platforms. So keep an eye on Tim Heath. Seems like an interesting young fella doing some crazy things. You think about 7-Eleven, Chris Barlow and his family worth $2 billion. Their valuation's tied to the Japanese parent company that bought 7-Eleven. So, again, if you've got someone who's willing to pay enough for something and you end up with a growth in your equity, you could be pushed up that list quite easily if there's a big enough uplift in the underlying value of something that you do. So imagine, you know, if we had a global financial crisis, for example, where the value in mining things went backwards, or the value of tech stocks, which recently has taken a bit of a hit. I know in the 2023 list, the founders of Atlassian and the founders of Canva actually slipped quite massively down the list. And you think, well, hang on, how did they lose billions? What did they do? Go on a spending spree? But again, their net worth was tied into the value of their business and their business shares. And in the tech world, you know, when you've got rising inflation and rising interest rates, you often see tech valuations get, you know, pulled back because people don't have the cash to throw into these investments and drive the share price up. So they fell massively back off the list purely on a share valuation because their company was worthless. So a couple of other new ones that are interesting. There's a basically there's a lot of passing of wealth as well now. So you'll see new names start to come on where the parents and the grandparents are passing away, but the wealth is being controlled by passing through family generations. So there's a group now taken over by Marnie Lewis Miller and Shay Lewis Thorpe, and they control the Australia's largest privately owned property development group called Lewis Land. So I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Lewis Land, but that's worth $1.2 billion. And once again, that's predominantly tied to the value of land. We talked about Australia having a housing affordability crisis where, you know, the supply demand of land is going to continue to go up. So they should see their billion-dollar valuation go up over time. So, you know, the other areas that have pushed people onto the list, you know, without going to all the names, there's car dealerships, manufacturing, equipment hire. The Kennards Group are quite high up there on that list. And as well as data centers, you think about the growth in AI and the amount of online data that needs to be stored. So the owners of data centers, their valuations are going through the roof. And of course, you know, it wouldn't be the crazy world we live in without seeing a bunch of crypto billionaires appearing on the list as well. So stop there for a minute to let you guys, I guess, consume some of that. And yeah, what are your thoughts so far on, you know, the interest in billionaires? Any questions that you'd like to ask?
I'm just sitting here thinking, how do these people think about risk and, you know, in their growth? I've always been fascinated, not so much about the billions, but the capacity to expand businesses to the point of that, you know, of that level of wealth. And obviously haven't got the answer, but it would be an interesting study to just pick apart, you know, commonalities between people, just as people, because there must be an appetite for risk, the ability to scale. I'm sure there's a level of intelligence with it, or the ability to delegate really effectively. But geez, it'd be fascinating to, you know, just break down the top 100 and get common traits and work out how they think.
I think if you inherit wealth or businesses, I think you're just exposed to different numbers. So there's a different level of normality, Marty. Yeah,
and I agree.
You know, I think obviously we've got a lot of small businesses. It's very hard to comprehend the numbers that some of these people would deal with, you know, like hundreds of millions for one deal. But to them, that's just normal. So I think you kind of, for a lot of these billionaires, and I'm not downplaying what they do, it's still absolutely phenomenal. And some of them have built wealth from the ground up, which is even more phenomenal. But I think a lot of these people, that's just what they're used to. They're used to money. They're used to bigger size deals. They're doing the same deals that you and I do, just on a much bigger scale. And yes, of course, the risk is there, but there's also, it's all relative, right, compared to what they've got. But to your point, what really interests me is the people that have built it from the ground up.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, those risks they took. But I don't know, like it's obviously on a very different scale, but you look at our business now and Jace would be the same. I just wouldn't have ever thought we'd be this big and be dealing with the, you know, like the wage bill that we've got every fortnight. That's mind-boggling. That would have been mind-boggling to me 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So yep. I just think it's a bit of that. Things just become normal as you grow. And I think the other thing is some people have just been in or have made amazing decisions at the right time, which has created the wealth very quickly. Crypto is a great example. You know, they've taken the punt on crypto and they've done it at the right time, or they've gotten to a particular industry, or they've gotten to a particular type of land and things have just blown up real quickly. So I think once you get that backing behind you, you're just playing on a different level. You're playing the same game. You're just playing on a different level that people like you and I are. So yeah, it's but it would be interesting. I just love to talk to people that started from the bottom up, and it'd be one or two things that made them their money, and you know, talk through those deals or those opportunities that they took.
It's interesting. Like I know a guy that his business is over 100 mil. And he once said to me, it's funny you mentioned what you mentioned because you sparked it for me. Mm. He said, it's only an extra zero a lot of the times, but that extra zero is significant, you know, compounding throughout. And yeah, I would say that person I'm thinking about is actually more defensive than what I would have given credit to in regards to risk. They certainly knew what they wanted to do, but they certainly didn't want to burn money in getting there. But a lot of the wealth that was built was through acquisition of the smaller process. So let's say we have our businesses where they're at, and there might be another business out there in the similar field that was very profitable, and they create great terms in buying that business, and then add that to their business and bring it in. But a lot of the times it was through business acquisition. And I'm sure there's other businesses that are just building product from scratch, but that was how he built it. And I thought, yeah. But he said, just what you said, he goes, it's basically doing what you do well with extra zeros and thinking around strategy on how to duplicate the extra zero. Mm. It's fascinating.
Yep. It's an interesting one. We often hear about billionaires, you hear about, Bill Gates having a foundation where, he donates a lot back, and look, and his billions are at a different scale or league. But, do you guys feel, and this is a general question, but does the everyday Australian feel like there's a role these billionaires should be playing in helping the economy and helping the general Australian people? Is there a bit of a them versus us feel or a tall poppy syndrome or anything like that generally in Australia? Do you feel that at all?
I think we're really bad for it in Australia, the tall poppy syndrome. I think it's shocking. Like if you compare us to other countries, in particular America, all we want to do is pull down those that have done well, Is there an us versus them? Not sure. Should they be helping? And I don't think so. I think it depends on their stage of life and they've got to want to make the decision. I think what happens with people is you get to a point, how much money do you need? And I think people, particularly billionaires, get to a point in life where they've started their business and the business is doing well and it pretty much runs without them, and they get to a point where they probably want to be more fulfilled and give back to a degree, because the money is no problem. There's more than they need. How do they give back? So, but do they have a responsibility? I don't think so. They've got to want to do it.
You don't want people to feel obligated to do it. And generally, you find if they've built that amount of wealth, they'll find ways to inject that in different ways for good things. So, but that should be that person's right to make that decision, given they've built their company to that point. Mm. And I think we should celebrate it a lot more in regards to understanding how they do it. Like you said, in the US, you get Shark Tank, and I know we've got it in Australia, but it's not seen in the same prestigious nature as it is in the US in regards to developing those types of businesses and people being successful. And I think there's a middle ground, because Aussies are Aussie and we're very different, but I think we need exposure to know what these types of people are doing, how they think, and how to encourage younger people coming through to think that way. Because the future of our innovation comes from people that are doing well. You got to see it to be it. I think we need a bit more exposure on it.
I think what is not given credit is the impact these people indirectly have. Mm. How many people does Gina Reinhardt employ? Yeah. How many super funds and retirements come from her businesses that then injects money back into the economy and helps the economy grow? So, these people are, the fact that they're taking risks and building their businesses is actually already giving back to society by giving people jobs and purpose. And I think that gets discounted a lot.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head, Nick. The only direction I was going to take it, apart from what you just said, was around tax contributions. So, if you've got billions in value in companies and cash and shares and property and so on and so forth, there's obviously then an onflow of how much you have to contribute back to the economy and taxes and everything else. And that one alone, the reach and effect of, let's say, the top 100 of that list, how many do they employ? Like, the Chemist Warehouse group, all the retail groups, all those people that have, busted their ass to be where they are over, generations of families potentially that have worked for it. And the lessons that have been instilled through the family to be able to continue to maintain that as well. So I think, you touch on a really good point. There is a lot of people out there that have a super fund full of money ready to retire on through their work with these companies and with these people over the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So, there's quite an effect just in that alone, regardless of what philanthropy those billionaires have done now or will do in the future.
I mean, how quick are people to judge rather than to understand and learn? And it's, you make a great point on it, because that, Yeah, I think we can learn a lot more. There's a lot of contributions that come from those types of people, more than what I'm doing. Yeah. A lot more.
Right. Well, I'm interested in our listeners, you know, so thank you for joining us for this episode of Behind the Billions, you know, which, who knows, maybe some of the billionaire rich list is a bit of bullshit, but, you know, it's smokes and mirrors, it's publicity, you know, it's got our attention, it's got us talking about it. So I'd love to know your thoughts on, you know, what is a billionaire's role in society, and, you know, feel free to message us hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au. Find us on Instagram and LinkedIn. Nick, Marty and I love a chat with our listeners, so do feel free to reach out. It's been great having you tune into this show, and until next time,
it's only an extra zero. Work out how to get it. Game over.